There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Drive Live Talks Careers.
It's Drive Live Talks Careers. Our guests today, Toby Simpson, Director at the Gulf Recruitment Group, and Stuart Walker, Partner at Afridi and Angel. How are you both, Stuart?
Yeah,
how are
you? Good.
Toby, now you were smiling then when we were talking about the best brains in the business quiz because we won last year, didn't we?
Oh, we did. What a night.
We won in style, Tim, let me tell you.
I could detect the gloating. I wasn't looking at Toby then, but it was just that glint in his eye that I couldn't see.
He punched the air and everything.
I know, yeah, he did.
Fisting the biceps right now.
Well, today you are here, Toby, to talk about careers. And, you know, this is a topic that you both came up with, put your heads together, so to speak, and came up with this. And it's really something that's probably been a bane of your life in recent years, the impact of technology and the mass market on job seeking. So if you look at the job market here, if you're new to Dubai or the UAE and you want to get a job, you look online and it's just, there's so many sites. There's so many people saying they can help you get a job. But is it difficult to see the wood from the trees?
There is so many sites, and actually this came to me because I found myself, when we're deciding on a topic, I found myself answering the same question time and time again I get from incredibly talented people who are incredibly frustrated with the job market. They see thousands of jobs, they apply to hundreds of jobs, and they get very, very little feedback or interaction from the vast majority of the people putting those adverts out there. And it's soul destroying. It's a worrying time of your life when you're seeking a position and there's a law of diminishing returns about the number of applications you send off. So I thought perhaps it's time to use the magic of the radio to kind of answer these questions once and for all and explain what's going on out there.
And sure, do you think it's something that maybe is the system is unclear? So people are sat at home thinking, I really need to get a job, I really need to do things. And they think, well, if I apply to as many things as possible, use sites, contact people directly, that they will end up hopefully with someone, the CV falls in front of the right person at the right time.
I think that approach is, you know, has its attractions. When I was applying for a training contract as a lawyer 20 plus years ago, I applied to the 100 biggest law firms in the City of London. Yeah, it was, let's get as many of these as you can and hope that someone bites.
And did it work?
Yeah, it did. but it was a laborious process. I mean, these were paper applications, you know. It took a while.
I mean, yeah. The thing is with this, though, isn't it, that what we hear regularly in this segment is whoever's here as a recruitment expert says, look, do not take a scattergun approach and apply for anything and everything. I mean, what we're describing at the moment is applying, or at least you've described, Stuart, as applying specifically in a sector to, say, 100 firms. What we do see here, I guess, Toby, is people just applying for any job. Doesn't matter if they're qualified for it, if they're ready for it, if they could do it. It's just, I'll go for anything.
They do, and it's not productive, but it's kind of, you understand the rationale why. When your hearing's set a little back, and you know, you're sitting there at your desk, you're told to treat job seeking as a full-time profession, just as you would an ordinary job. But an ordinary person would sit there and say, what on earth do you mean? What am I supposed to do rather than send out a job adverts? It's not straightforward. It's not kind of common knowledge about how to get around and how to network effectively and how to actually get in front of people before a job even happens, which is where the real value add comes in. But the reason it's happening is effectively, as we mentioned, the mass market technology. Now, nowadays, if we stick out an advert, we'll get 1,000 responses. Now, this never used to happen. And what that means is that we are forced, or the employers in particular, are forced to put in filtering techniques. We put in barriers between the job seeker and the end user, the employer, or the agency in my case, because we have to. There's no possible way, if we get 3,000 job applications through, that I want to, as a CEO of a search firm, I want my people to spend the man hours going through every single application. So we have to use technology that brings that down to a manageable level. Now, what that means, particularly from the end user, the client's perspective, is they have the luxury that they can be incredibly selective. So they can make a wish list as long as the length of their arm, and they will get exactly kind of what they're looking for in terms of the paper CV. But where I think they're missing out on here is you filter by criteria of job applications, but you're not filtering at all by the quality of the human being. And that's what I think what we lose from the time I was a spotty youth of a headhunter a long time ago, when it was a totally different system. We'd sit around the fax machine waiting for it to start beeping, and a candidate, a CV would fly in through this new wonderful technology, the fax machine, and later the email, and we'd all get very excited about it. And if that was a reasonable human being, we would interview them, and then we'd all sit around in a circle and we'd talk about what we could do proactively for that individual. Now, I think that is still where the value in recruitment and headhunting sits, but increasingly pushed into making it more of a transactional process. So there's barriers between ourselves and the clients, there's barriers between ourselves and the candidates, and there are so many barriers between the candidate and the client, it's untrue. So you're really only going to get a response to a job advert if you actually have everything they are looking for and they've stated in that particular advert.
Oh, it sounds very, very tough out there at the minute. Coming up, find out how you can work your way around this algorithm and finally get to the person that needs to see your CV. If you do have a question for either Toby Simpson or Stuart Walker, text in 4001 or via the free messaging app.
Drive Live Talks Careers.
This Drive Live Talks Careers. Our guest today is Toby Simpson. He is the director at Gulf Recruitment Group. Stuart Walker is a partner at Afridi & Angel. Just before, we were talking about your careers, the impact of technology in the mass market on job seeking. We talked about the fact that lots of people apply to lots of different places, whether through agencies or recruitment consultants, and are unhappy that they don't get a personal email every single time back saying, yes, we thought you were fantastic, but we couldn't quite see you as the right fit here. But what I wanted to look at, starting with you, Stuart, is you have a very different experience. You're recruiting lawyers for your firm, so you're thinking in a very narrow mind and a different skill set. So how do you go about recruiting lawyers specifically? What makes it different?
Well, in the legal industry, we have two sort of defining concepts. One is the post-qualification experience, so how many years it's been since you were admitted or called to the bar. And then you have your area of specialization. So many lawyers will be quite narrowly specialized. So I would go to a recruiter and say, I want a two-year PQE telecoms lawyer. Yeah, I don't want any old lawyer. Yeah, I want an 8-year qualified banking lawyer, for example. And then they will go and try and find someone with exactly that sort of narrow profile.
And do you ever feel like you might miss out on someone that's really talented and well-suited? Because Toby's mentioned, you use this system and they filter out people based on your very specific requirements. But maybe there's someone who's got 18 months in telecommunications and they could be the most fantastic fit for your firm. Are you ever concerned that you might miss someone that's really, really good?
We tend to have the opposite problem in that we get someone that fits exactly our profile, and then when they start with the firm, you find out they've got some sort of fatal character flaw, and they weren't very good.
That's not just lawyers generally, right? No.
It kind of goes to reinforce the point, though, that I think the big challenge for HR now is to actually make the first criteria the quality of the individual, which is so hard to quantify. That is a really big challenge for our industry, and that the last criteria is the number of miles on the clock or years of PQE or whatever it might be. Now, there are always going to be niche exceptions, to the general job seeking market. The legal market is a microcosm within the recruitment industry. If you tend to be, it's a very candidate driven market. So if you're a famous and highly respected lawyer like Stuart, you're going to have headhunters calling you every day to offer you lunch, and Stuart's biggest problem is going to be choosing between the lobster ravioli and the filet mignon rather than...
It's that every day, yeah. That's my lifestyle.
Oh, just like in here, Tim, isn't it?
Kale salad or Subway? Which one are you having today, Tim? But it's interesting that, though, because it always strikes me, I work for a small company, I ended up running a small company for a while, and for us, as a smaller company, it was much more about individuals, and it really was more important, because what we had to make sure of was that people that joined us, like lots of salespeople, they had to fit.
Well, the question I got to ask you is kind of how long ago was that? The reason is let's take a paint manufacturing company. So the head of sales flounces into the HR room because that's what salespeople do.
They do flounce
a lot. Yeah. And he says to the head of HR, I want to find a really good salesperson. So the head of HR sort of toddles off and dips into the database, the millions of people that they've managed to collect, and she turns up the next day with 1,000 CVs. So the head of sales goes, what am I supposed to do with these? I can't possibly read all these. So then the HR person starts saying, okay, well, let's filter them down. So let's filter people with specifically with blue paint experience. So then all of a sudden you're down from 1,000 to 800 people. Okay, well, let's filter them from, I don't know, someone who's got experience to selling into a particular industrial complex in Saudi. So then all of a sudden you're down to 300. And it goes on like this. Now, these aren't actually 100% essential for the sales guy. His priority is he has to make the stack of CVs manageable. So what you end up with is you end up with a bunch of criteria such as must have sold in Saudi, must have 10 years of experience, even though that really doesn't matter if you're a good salesperson or not, must play cricket on a Wednesday and speak an ancient dialect from Mesopotamia, that because simply that's going to get you down to 10 CVs. Now, this is the problem they face, and this is why, you know, these employers have such a luxury now that they have access to such an enormous amount of talent. And if we can solve the problem of how do we put the people qualities first and then start throwing on our, you know, often unnecessary requirements, then we're going to have a much better outcome.
And we've talked a bit about people using headhunters or recruitment agencies. And sometimes, you know, there's search engines available. And Stuart, I want to ask you, sometimes people submit CVs, submit very personal information and data. What kind of protection do we have here in the UAE to sort of say, well, look, this is only for this job interview. This has got very personal details about my background, my qualifications. How do I know that information, that data isn't being shared in places I'd rather it wasn't?
Good news if you're applying for a position with a company in the DIFC, because there's a strong data protection regime there. Not so great if you're applying to anyone else, because there is no overarching UAE federal data protection law. There are a number of laws that sort of protect people's privacy and actually make it a criminal offence to share information, particularly over a computer network. But the reality is that once you submit your information to some organisations in this country, that information will be sold to any number of telemarketers and, yeah, other salespeople.
I mean, the reality is once you've sent information over the internet, your information is there somewhere in many instances. And I guess that's something that we sort of have to live with. But what do you do if somebody's sitting there now thinking, well, I've just sent out my CV to I don't know how many hundred different jobs and I'm getting nothing and I'm a great bloke or a great person, I should say. What can you do about that? How do you get to the point where characteristics of a human are ahead of qualifications in an age which is driven by filtered data?
It's difficult.
Almost impossible, isn't it?
Kind of. You have to become your own old-fashioned headhunter with all the tips and tricks of networking and getting people in front of people, i.e. getting yourself in front of the right people. As a CEO, I've hired people without going through an enormous search parameter, because I met some guy a while ago. We all met him. We got on with him. He's absolutely fantastic. So when a new idea comes up that we want to launch some new kind of venture or new idea, we go straight away and go and see if that guy's available. So the real trick to this is before a position even becomes mass market, before the HR director has sat down and built out the organogram and aligned kind of the skills in each particular position and the budgets for each particular position, if you can become the person there that they're going to shape that round, if you're going to get in there when you hear they're about to launch a new factory X, Y, and Z, if you can get to the idea phase before it turns into an organogram and a bunch of job specs, then you've got a much better opportunity.
What's that word you're saying, Toby?
Which
organogram.
It's you know the kind of boxes. So you'll see a chart. So you've got the CEO at the top in a little box.
Okay.
And then you've got some lines underneath, and it says CFO, HR director, chief legal officer.
So it's just like the organisation in a diagram.
Organisational chart. That's probably a much better way of saying.
Right up your street, actually. Organised diagrams.
I know. I like this. I mean, I like the sound of it. I just didn't know what it was.
Little eyes lit up there.
I was like, oh, a diagram, organogram. So that's kind of how you can try to get around it. Be your own publicist. I mean, if Shane Phillips was here, he would be telling us if you were applying for the paint industry job, you could, you know, make a video about it and send it to the CEOs of every paint company in the world. But on a smaller scale, I guess that is part of the solution.
The trick is not to be annoying, and that is really hard when you just look. You know, I'm sure Stuart gets the same, and I've got the same. I get 100 emails a day of people looking for a job, and this is, you know, a job with me, not me as a headhunter at all. And it's so easy to say no to that, because we have 10 projects on our plate at any one time, and we're dealing with that, and we don't have time to deal with any, you know, any other little issue. So the trick of it is to make yourself relevant somehow. Now, there's a huge amount that, you know, you could write a book on this, but effectively, I understand the frustration. You're made unemployed, you've been told you've got to find a job, and there's people counting on you, your wife, your kids, to go out and find a new position, and you feel powerless because it's very hard to turn yourself into an old-fashioned headhunter overnight. And, you know, it's maybe something that I'll look into helping them develop.
Strive Live talks careers. Two guests today, Toby Simpson, Stuart Walker. We're going to come back to a point you made there, Stuart, about relevance. How to keep yourself relevant next.
Joe.
Text us on 4001.
It's Drive Live, and it is Drive Live Talks Careers. We've got two guests with us. Toby Simpson from the Gulf Recruitment Group. Our legal expert is Stuart Walker, who's a partner at Afridi & Angel. We're looking at the impact of technology and the mass market on job seeking. You send your CV in, use a scattergun approach, and then sit back and wonder why nobody's coming back to you. Well, simply put, recruiters, people who are recruiting, are looking for a very specific candidate, and you are filtered out before you've even got anywhere near getting a foot in the door. It's an issue and it's a problem. I asked you just a moment ago, Stuart, if you've got anything that stands out in recent memory of somebody who's applied for a position, and you said, and I quote, I'm not sure how much of an anecdote this is, but I think this illustrates the point really well, because it's one very simple thing that this candidate did that stood out.
I think if anyone approached us initially and did anything too zany, we'd be terrified, frankly. But what this gentleman did is, after the interview, he sent me a handwritten note thanking me for spending some time with him. And he was a good candidate anyway, but that elevated him to the next level, and he got the job.
And did he write the note in fountain pen? Because that's very important.
I think he did, on lovely cream paper as well.
As long as it's not got any perfume or aftershave on, because that takes it in a very different direction, doesn't it?
But you see, the thing is, and I mean, the legal profession is perhaps slightly different to the marketing profession in terms of approach to gaining employment, and you understand that. But if you follow up in that way, if there are five or six candidates and the sixth candidate follows up in that way, that is not, and I use quotation marks, sucking up to the person to get a position. That is demonstrating thoroughness. That's demonstrating manners, which are all applicable in the legal environment, aren't they?
Yeah, no, that suggests that they would be good with client care issues. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And Toby, is this something that you would recommend as a strategy? Maybe not necessarily a handwritten note, but having something that you as a candidate then use as your something that makes you stand out and stay in someone's mind?
The problem is that if everybody starts doing the same thing, it becomes more standard. You have to know your audience. If you've actually got into an interview process, the key thing is most people go in there going, right, I've memorized everything to do with my background, and I can, as soon as they ask me this question about my strengths and weaknesses, I've got a two-page essay I'm ready to absolutely spit out here. But what they're not doing is they're not reacting like a salesperson would to the signals the employer is giving them. Now, they're not hiring you because they want you to do function A, B, C, D. They're hiring you because they have a bigger goal at the end of the day. And if you begin to understand what that goal is, then you can begin to tailor your answers to that sort of response. But, you know, little things are like body language. Mm. Almost impossible to concentrate on and make sense when you're saying something. But if you concentrate on your body language and matching your body language to the person you're speaking to, you're more likely to get a personal connection. And actually, when personal connections happen, and when they happen well, employers will forgive any number of faults because they like that person, they want to sit next to them, and they want to spend the next 5 years with them.
When does it get creepy, though? If somebody, if the interviewer scratches his left eyebrow and the interviewee scratches his right eyebrow, when do you cross a line there, Toby?
I think that's some sort of Masonic signal, isn't it? Is that how it works?
Yeah. You've given the secret away, haven't you?
Live on radio.
But sure, you know, for something like law, how do you stay relevant, I guess? If you want to be someone that's hot property in the job market, how do you stay relevant and current so that people know who you are, or when your CV lands on the desk, that they think, okay, this is someone I want to talk to?
I mean, what people do is they'll try and work on high-profile transactions in their particular area of specialization. So they can say, you know, I did the biggest XYZ deal last year and I was the lead attorney on that matter. So you're trying to gravitate to areas where other practitioners would have, you know, knowledge of the transactions.
And Toby, you know, taking that to a wider mass market, how do you stay relevant in your field and make sure people are aware that you're across what you need to be across?
Yeah. When you're doing your current job, you need to be aware of everything you need to know about your current job. But when you're job seeking and when you're meeting people and when you're trying to look at things from a broader perspective, you need to teach yourself to have a much broader worldly perspective. You need to have the information first. If in your industry there's a new, I think we mentioned during the break, automotive. So let's say there's a new type of transmission change, or there's a new marketing kind of amazing spin thing that's coming out of the States. You need to know that. Whereas normally you don't really have time to read the trade magazines and spend time online. When you're a job seeker, it's all you have is time. And you need to use that, not just sending out CVs for jobs you're never going to get, but to make sure that you're on top, that you're, you know, the most articulate, the most knowledgeable person in your field that you possibly can be. So that when you do get that interview, and there's ways of getting interviews not just by sending CVs, but when you do get that meeting, you're more likely to nail it.
That's another topic we need to come back to, how you get an interview without sending a CV. But just to bring it back for a moment to getting noticed when you first send the application letter, the CV, to the recruitment agency, along with 1,000 other people for that one sales job. How do you stand out in that initial approach so that perhaps certain keywords are highlighted? Is there a way of doing that?
People obsess about the CVs, and actually, as long as the information's there, we're going to find it. Right. If you've ever seen these heat maps of CVs where you can see where people's eyes go on a CV, you know, I've seen well over, must be 10,000 CVs, and I know exactly how to go to the information I'm looking for within 30 seconds, no matter how they've formatted it, which is kind of fine. So as long as the information's there and it's not too waffly, I suppose you can begin to get a sense of the character of the individual just by reading the CV, but maybe that's because I've seen so many. As long as the information's clear, it's professionally presented, you've said what you've done, and you're not going over the top on sort of subjective claims. I'm the best manager in the world, or I'm proactive and distill my time efficiently, and all that sort of is a waste of time. We're simply looking to find out what you've done. Stuart mentioned the old classic argument that we'll get going, photo on a CV. I'll go a step further, video on a CV.
Okay.
Video on a CV, because a CV is a piece of paper and it's a document and it's easily discarded. It's much, much harder to discard a person than it is a CV.
Oh, top tip then. We'll end there. That was Drive Live Talks Careers. Toby Simpson, Director at Gulf Recruitment. Toby, thank you very much for joining us.
A pleasure to be here.
And Stuart Walker, partner at Afridi & Angel. Thanks for joining us, Stuart.
No problem.
Coming up after the news, we will be talking about a new species of bird that's been spotted in Dubai. I'll also have today's lost word, find out what's been leaving these students in tears.
Stroll across four empires, two continents and so much more in the streets of Istanbul.
It's a minute to five.
Explore Istanbul starting from 2,385 dirhams. Book by 23rd November. Visit emirates.com. Conditions apply. Fly Emirates. Hello tomorrow.
So I'm hiring a new team and I need to arrange their health insurance. The expenses just keep piling up.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.